From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in 2016 when a young woman reached a breaking point in her frustration with state politics. At that time, Katie Fahey was a political neophyte of sorts, but after taking on the issue of gerrymandering in her home state of Michigan, she's now known on the national stage. If you're not familiar with the practice of gerrymandering, it dates back to 1812 when Elbridge Gerry, the governor of Massachusetts, redrew district lines to benefit his party. The new map of support resembled the shape of a salamander, leading the practice to be called gerrymandering, or perhaps gerrymandering, when you see it spelled out on a piece of paper. And since that time, every 10 years, district lines across the country are redrawn, often by state legislators themselves. Both parties do it, both of the major parties anyway. Democrats in California made big changes to district maps in the 1980s. Republicans in 2010 took the practice to a new level. After Barack Obama won the White House in 2008 and Democrats took over the House and Senate, headlines across the country described the Republican Party as an endangered species. Well, that's when a little-known strategist named Chris Jankowski created Project Red Map. With $30 million, he accomplished what some experts call the biggest political heist and the biggest bargain political heist in American history. The results led to a level of gerrymandering the country has not seen before. It influenced elections and even influences social issues like the Flint water crisis, the so-called bathroom bills, and more. Now, critics of the process say representatives are no longer accountable to citizens when they can effectively control elections. They say with gerrymandering, legislators choose their voters rather than voters choosing their representatives. Recent movements have led to voters pushing back and demanding citizen-driven redistricting. And sometimes that's been successful, including Fahey's efforts in Michigan. This hour, we explore gerrymandering through a documentary called Slay the Dragon. It will be screened at the Little Theater next week as part of the One Take documentary series. But first, some of the people behind it join us on Connections. I'd like to welcome our guest in studio. Director, filmmaker, and programmer for the One Take doc series is Linda Maroney, who's back with us. And I think you were saying a lot of political docs out there.
Yeah.
It's a moment.
It's a moment, exactly. This year I've watched, I can't even tell you how many political docs. There'll be a lot of them at the festival this year. But they're engaging and entertaining and informative.
Thanks for being here, as always.
Thank you.
Tim Nealon is chair of the Department of History and Political Science at Nazareth College. Welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Evan. It's good to be here.
And on the line with us is Katie Fahey, founder of the citizen action group Voters Not Politicians. Welcome, Katie. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Linda, briefly here, this particular film, Tuesday, 6:30 at the Little?
Tuesday, 6:30 at the Little. And after the film, we'll have a Skype with co-director Chris Durance,
who we're going to be talking to briefly here in just a moment here. But that's Tuesday, 6:30. This is a film that, if it feels like a wonky political film, it's sadly, it's quite a drama, isn't it?
It is. It unfolds in such a fascinating way and, you know, heart racing in a lot of ways, I would say.
And Tim Nealon, before we kind of work with Katie through her experiences here, when you talk to students about the term gerrymandering, how many come into class with much of an understanding about what it is?
Few, if any. Even though they've had the AP or they've had Gov in high school, they still don't quite grasp the way that it works or how sophisticated it is now.
Why do you think so few of your students have an idea here this far into the history of gerrymandering in this country?
Because they are often interested in social movements and social groups. And when it comes down to the weeds of politics and the way that it actually works, it really has to be some retraining and some ways to refocus them. But a documentary like this would be a good way to do that because it is very dramatic. You know, David versus Goliath story. And again, the way that the gerrymandering works and does affect the kind of public policy students are interested in.
Linda, I remember, I bet you it was 2005, and I was doing a piece for local news on gerrymandering. And I remember looking, I was relatively new to the region, and looking at the district maps. And the district, the congressional district, went from Rochester to Buffalo. And it just sort of, it took a nice little boat ride along the Lake Ontario shoreline and connected. I'm thinking, why is there somebody representing both Rochester and parts of Buffalo? and just parts of the shoreline. It looked like a diseased banana. It just seemed ridiculous.
Well, I think that's one of the really fun moments in the film, right? When they go through all the different shapes and different animals and whatnot. It becomes art rather than anything else, it looks like.
I think producer Megan Mack was laughing. I think she took some notes on some of the names of them, and we'll come back to that in a minute here. But yeah, honestly, Katie Fahey, I think when people start to learn about this, they're very much frustrated about the fact that they're probably living in a place where it's very difficult for a party to flip things. What do you think most people know about gerrymandering?
I think it often just maybe evokes that feeling of being in AP history. I think if people have heard of it, they're like, oh yeah, that's bad, right? But as soon as you show them a map of their actual district, often they're looking and saying, that's not my community. That's one part of my community. Why would you draw it like that? That's not how decisions should be made. That's not, you know, how does this hodgepodge of cities and people really effectively talk to a representative to pass anything in our state capital or in Washington, D.C.?
Looking at some of the terms here, Texas District 135 is the upside down elephant. North Carolina District 12 is the snake. Pennsylvania District 7 is Goofy Kicking Donald Duck, our favorite. That's a good one. Louisiana District 2 is a mustache. Katie, you probably have a whole list yourself that you've seen.
Yes, and in Michigan, we had coloring pages where we would just give them to people, not telling them they were districts, and ask them to guess what they were. And we got an elf that was reading a book. There's a cross. There's just a straight-up cross. There's definitely like a dragon type of shape and a bat. So we had some fun with that. But unfortunately, the reality is that even though these shapes look absolutely preposterous, what it means is that millions of people aren't actually getting a representative democracy.
Yeah, and you know, I talked about the diseased banana or the sort of the limp barbell or whatever the case you want to, the old district from Rochester to Buffalo, and I still remember the voter registration advantage looking up the numbers, and this goes back 15 years. It was 212,000 to 90,000. There were 212,000 Democrats, 90,000 Republicans, and I remember thinking, why would anybody think you could have a chance here? I mean, could turn out that God is real, comes down, registers Republican, and runs against the Democrat, and is going to get whomped in that district. I mean, that's just the way that was for so long. But we have really sort of grown to tolerate it. Or I guess I should ask you, Katie, do you think we tolerate it? Do you think we know enough to tolerate it?
Technology has gotten so intense recently. The amount of data that political consultants have on each of us is at a much greater level than previously. And because these lines are only drawn once every 10 years after the census, theoretically, so that it can account for population shifts, I think it does stay out of our mind. And with legislators and governors working to draw these lines, I mean, they don't want people paying attention. They do it behind closed doors. They try and rush the bill through. In Michigan, it was just a list of census tracts that people were voting on. They didn't even know what the map actually looked like. And that just goes to show why I think when you have a process that's being so hidden from people, it makes sense that they don't know about it. But thankfully, I think not only this Play the Dragon as a documentary, but there's been a lot more coverage just because of the egregious red map and how much that has controlled the last 10 years of elections in America.
So we'll talk about that more in a moment here. And listeners, if you want to call with questions or comments on gerrymandering, I'm very curious to know about how you feel about this issue in whatever district you live in, state, federal. Do you have frustration? What do you think can actually be done about this? It's 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program, connections@WXXI.org. Linda Maroney, as a filmmaker, there's a lot of dry political films that are made. Again, as we've said, this is a dramatic film. What do you think works about the way this film is constructed?
I think it's the unfolding, the observational footage around Katie's story and the Supreme Court case, that it's unfolding. It's not just like your textbook, you know, your AP textbook come alive, but we're engaged with Katie, we're engaged with everyone else, and we're rooting for underdogs.
Rooting for underdogs is one thing, but I think figuring out how the underdogs can win is a daunting part of this. And I want to talk to both Katie and Tim about something. Tim, I want to follow up with you first and kind of get Katie's take here. You say that you think redistricting really has to be bipartisan. there's going to be inevitably some citizens groups who say it should be nonpartisan. I don't want political leaders involved at all. I want them out of the room because they're just going to make deals. You get this district, I get this. You get this upside down elephant, I'll take Goofy kicking Mickey in the head over here, and we all get our own little piece of the turf. Why do you think bipartisan can work?
Because I am concerned that, for example, one of the ideas that the Katie's group had was 4 Democrats, 4 Republicans, and 5 independents. Well, as we know, very few people are actually independent in terms of the way that they actually behave politically. They either lean towards the Democrats or the Republicans. And so those, you might think, oh, great, this is citizens. But citizens are just people who vote and generally have a preference. I'm not sure you're going to get a commission that's going to be absolutely perfect. One way to try to control for that is to make sure that there's some sort of parity in the voices.
Okay. Well, let's talk to Katie about what's been happening in Michigan in particular. And I think people might be surprised to hear gerrymandering, Flint water crisis, and sort of see a connection between these things. Katie, take us through that.
Yeah, I would just say, going back to the first part of the question, when it comes to redistricting and gerrymandering, how do you actually make change? And there's 3 main ways that any law can impact that. Who is drawing the lines? So obviously, when we have our currently elected officials, they have a huge conflict of interest because they're going to potentially be choosing the voters that are going to vote for them personally to be in this, as well as just trying to manipulate it for their political party instead of how do we actually keep a community together to hear their voice. The second way is the criteria. So what's really interesting and what a lot of people don't know is you can actually make gerrymandering illegal. Just our Supreme Court has said you have to do that at the state level. They're not going to do it at the federal level. So in your amendment or in whatever your state passes, like in Michigan, we said these maps cannot be drawn to benefit one political party or another. And the third way that you can impact these lines is by changing the process. So our process, and much like California's and Arizona's and others across the country, actually brings the commissioners have to go to communities and talk to them about what their representation should look like, about the problems they're facing that our elected officials actually make decisions on, like roads and water and schools. Flint in Michigan, we had a law that was passed, the emergency manager law, that people actually petitioned to get rid of, which that emergency manager law took away local control and appointed somebody to make financial decisions for communities that were struggling financially. The people of Michigan got rid of it, and then our newly gerrymandered in representatives found a loophole where they could ignore the citizen veto and put it in anyways. A Flint manager was appointed, and they ultimately made the decision to switch where the water source in Flint was coming from, and that's what led to the Flint water crisis. And so the people of Flint tried to fight back, tried to say, we want our own representation. We do not want an emergency manager. And then a legislature that was not afraid of getting unelected. The only way your first thing after being elected to ignore the will of the people would be that you are unafraid that those people can get you out of office.
Yeah. And unfortunately, as the film kind of displays, there's way too many unafraid lawmakers. I mean, there's way too many people who are just not at risk. So voters, not politicians, Katie, tell us about that.
Yeah, so we had started a Facebook post with a very uncatchy name at first of Michiganders for Nonpartisan Redistricting Reform, but quickly saw that really what gerrymandering comes down to is, do you want voters or politicians voting for each other? And so voters should choose their politicians, not the other way around. We want voters drawing these lines, not politicians with the worst conflict of interest. Now that we've passed the amendment, for the first time ever, we get to make sure that people know that they can be in behind those doors have actually been busted open. They can talk about their communities and they can actually serve on this commission. And we've actually started, I've started an organization called The People that's trying to help take the lessons that we learned in citizen organizing and how do you actually use the political process to change these big systemic problems. And we're helping people now across the country on redistricting and other systemic political issues that until we fix, our elected representatives really won't be able to do the job that we're sending them to our state capitals to do.
Katie, you have some emotional moments in the film, and no doubt there's more moments that were off camera that are not in the film, because this is really hard work. I'm sure it's dispiriting. So let me just ask you a little bit about that. I've said on this program before, I remember growing up listening to my father tell me, you know, Here's what happens when you try to get involved with politics. You either get beaten down and you quit, or you become what you despise. Now, that's sort of a cynical view, but a lot of people hold that view for a lot of the kinds of reasons that we see in this kind of a film. When you hit that sort of a wall, what has it been like for you?
I think for me, what I kept coming back to at the time, you know, I was working full time, I was trying to get my MBA, I was doing some other volunteer work. And if I was going to be spending the very little free time that I had in my life to try and do something as crazy as amend our state constitution and gerrymandering, I wanted to be doing it the right way. I was so tired of compromising. I was so tired of the excuses that politicians use for why they couldn't do things the way that they hope that they're done, why they couldn't just, you know, actually listen to the people and actually use democratic processes to make decisions. And I think it was really hard. We got a lot of pressure. So many people telling us, no, you should just give in. It doesn't have to actually be nonpartisan. You know, if you guys don't, you know, have somebody else come in and take control of this campaign, like, you'll lose. And that was scary, especially as a 27-year-old who doesn't know what they're doing and wants to do a really good job for everybody. But in my own mind, it was always a test of, should I be fighting for democracy? And so if we stick with the democratic process, if we try to do this the right way and it works and it succeeds, then I know that when I am fighting to get all of my friends to vote, that that does matter. When I'm trying to make sure that we're getting the right people into office, that does matter. But for me, it was really a question of, like, is democracy worth fighting for? And thankfully, we had an amazing experience where I really felt like it is. This process can be beautiful. We had over 16,000 people directly donate and give to this campaign, over 14,000 who are direct volunteers. And we all were there because we wanted a better future for Michiganders in general, not because we wanted a better future for Democrats or Republicans. We wanted to create a system we could trust, believe in, and be proud of again.
Well, I have to say, I think, and maybe this is more to the point that Tim has been making, this issue should not be a partisan issue as in the way that it appeals to citizens, right? This is one of those rare issues, Tim, where, you know, you shouldn't have to, you shouldn't look at this issue and immediately say, oh, well, you're part of the left if you support this, or you're part of the right if you support this. Should not be that way.
No, not at all. And again, I think the issues in Michigan were tended to be the Republican-led legislature. But Maryland also is mentioned briefly in the film, and that's a case of the Democrats. I think no matter what political party or affiliation or unaffiliated you are, you should be concerned about this because ultimately, as they say, it is the politicians choosing the voters, and that has a direct outcome on the kind of public policy you're going to see. So irrespective left or right, you should have elections that are at least more fair and more representative of the will of the people. Mm-hmm. So, no, absolutely. Katie's right on that.
And, Katie, there's one point in the film where you say, I'm tired. And I'm thinking of, well, I want to phrase this in a way that's sort of fair and is, does not minimize you as a strong powerhouse person, a strong woman who is really kind of going up against a mountain of obstacles. How often did you feel, whether it was sort of corporate interest, political interest, that people in the room were looking at you, minimizing you because of your age or your gender?
Constantly. I wish it wasn't the case, too. You know, one of the biggest things that was shocking to me going through it, that is highlighted a little less in the film, but the establishment nonprofit organizations that have really helped champion good governance in our state, I think they just only saw age and the fact that we were organizing online. I think that was a really different concept too. That's how we were able to get though people in all 83 counties of Michigan within 2 days. If I would have had to like physically go to everywhere, it would have never happened. And it made me, that part was really hard, but what was really exciting is you could see it and you could feel it from all of us as citizens uniting together. You know, we were constantly sharing and trying. That was one of the biggest, I think it's like talked about a little bit in the film too, like just the ability to try and to know that we have tried as hard as we could, I think was a really important thing for us because we knew these lines are going to be redrawn in 2021 no matter what. So we need to try as hard as we can to change them before then, because if we fail, the next 10 years of elections are going to be partisan and are going to be making some votes count more than they should and make some votes count less than they should. And it could lead to another Flint water crisis. I thought about that almost every single day. And that's how it made it easier to just kind of say, like, you know what, I'm always going to be the one who will say, yes, we can still work together. I'm always going to be the one who's going to try and find the solution, because our alternative is the status quo. And the status quo is horrifying.
I want to sneak in some listener feedback before we turn to our second half hour. Matt, I'll come to you in a moment. And I know, listeners, you might be thinking, well, just get a good lawsuit going. Get this thing to the U.S. Supreme Court, because they'll decide this is unconstitutional. You can't do this. We'll get to that in our second half hour. But first, let me get Matt, who is calling from Parenton. Hi, Matt. Go ahead.
Hi. Good afternoon. Gerrymandering has made me crazy for years. When you describe the district, it goes from Monroe County through the lake over to Erie County. Erie County, what do they know about Monroe County? I always felt that to be truly fair, why don't we have natural boundaries for gerrymandering. We have county lines. Why don't we do it by county? Two representatives from each county. And that, to me, seems to be fair. My other issue is everything is so money-driven in government. I mean, the old saying is you can't fight City Hall. And, yeah, I give up. I've given up. I'm 60 years old. I just don't feel I can change City Hall. There's just too much power. There's too much money involved in politics. And that's why the gerrymandering comes about as well. It's just very frustrating, and I just feel hopeless at times that there's nothing we can do to change what's happening. You know, corporations are making enormous donations to politicians, and we just turn a blind eye to it. I mean, the politicians almost flaunt it in front of us. Like, what can we do? And that's just my take on it. And I think gerrymandering is a crime. You know, let these representatives work more on what they need to do and not worry so much about gerrymandering. And thank you for the time, and thank you for covering the subject.
You got it. Thanks, Matt. Go ahead, Katie. You want to respond to that?
Yeah, first of all, I just want to say you're not alone in feeling that way. Like, so many of us feel like the system is so broken and so big that, like, why even try to fix it? But there are thousands of us trying, and I will stand with you to help fight for gerrymandering and ending it here. The county lines, the one thing with representatives is you want to make sure there's an equal population in these districts so that you don't have one representative who is representing like 100,000 people and another who's only representing like 200 people. In Michigan in particular, Wayne County has about a third of our population, and we have 83 counties, and one of them already has a third. But using existing city boundaries, using school district lines, this is part of a lot of the criteria that if you see states that have actually tried to curb gerrymandering or completely end it, they incorporate, as well as talking to communities, because how you might define your community on an issue, maybe it's a watershed, actually. Like in Michigan, water is a huge deal. So if a whole community is sharing a body of water, they probably have more in common than probably people in the middle of the state who are not by that lake, by that river, having to drink that same water. And that's when it switches. When you can start making why these lines are drawn based on the fact that we are trying to get representative government instead of we are trying to just look at people as Democrats and Republicans, that is when you actually can see change. And I really see it too, as gerrymandering is not a silver bullet. We still have to address money in politics. We still have to be able to even look at our election system and see, is it fair? But when we start changing these most basic building blocks of democracy, that's when we have a better chance of taking on the money in politics fight. Because our representatives, we can actually unelect, hopefully, because our vote means something again.
Let me grab another question from a listener, and I will ask both Katie and Tim to weigh in on this. Alex says, and who will volunteer to be on these commissions then? The zealots, who are even less accountable to the public. We need impartial algorithms dividing populations by concentric geographic areas. The will of the people, this would be predetermined by the zealots. So, Tim Nealon first, what do you think?
I disagree. I think that you could get academics and others who would look at this with, yes, maybe they're all partisan underneath their clothing, but I think they would also take this seriously and would be willing to make hard decisions and to use community integrity as certainly as a guide, and also the Supreme Court, which has ruled one person, one vote, so therefore you can't have uneven districts. So I disagree. I don't think it would necessarily have to be zealots. I think you could get people. I also would disagree with using AI. I mean, that's one of my problems with the efficiency gap, is it's too machine-driven, and it doesn't recognize natural geographic political boundaries or the fact that, for example, the city of Rochester has a ton of Democrats in it. And if you did that, you'd end up with one of those weird, strange-looking districts, because you'd have to divide the Democrats in the city up with all of the Republicans in the county. I don't think that would work either. I think you could come up with a rational, reasonable, imperfect, because it's human-driven, but I think it would do a much better job of making fair elections.
Okay. Katie, can you respond to the email?
Yeah. It's a very common thought process. Somebody at the end of the day programs those algorithms, though. And we know that that is, you know, how much power does that then that one person get? What's really cool about when you can change how the redistricting process happens is, first of all, there are citizens who just want fairness. I mean, I've dealt with at least 14,000 of them in Michigan. And, you know, the people who are excited to do jury duty and are excited to vote just because they can vote. What the political science data has shown is that even if you can just change who draws the lines, you don't make it politicians who are pretty used to the gray areas of the law. If you've changed them to regular citizens who have strict criteria in the Constitution, meaning if they violate it, they're going to get sued and those maps are going to get thrown out, and you have a transparent process where the public can actually watch and hear the deliberations of why are we moving this line here, when the public can actually see the data that's going to be used in the map drawing. Because let's be real, like, computers still help draw these even with citizen commissions. It's just way too complicated without it. But when you add that transparency and people are involved in the process, and you start with listening to the communities, you get really good maps. And all of the maps that have been drawn by independent commissions so far have all been upheld as legal, no matter what the challenges were. And when those criteria are spelled out again, it's black and white on what's a gerrymander and what's not, which is the problem without having strict criteria in place right now.
Katie's story is part of the larger story told in the film Slay the Dragon. You can see the film Tuesday at the Little Theater. Linda, first of all, when you think about good documentary filmmaking, I admitted to you when you walked in my office today that I sort of feel deflated on an issue like this. But at the same time, I'm sure Katie's experience in the film sort of illustrates that there are those moments, but then do you feel empowered? Do you think this film empowers people?
Absolutely. I think the message you walk away from is that it's up to us individually and in communities, and it's grassroots levels to fix things and to make a difference and to make change. You know, the one thing, one of the things that really stood out to me in this film is talking about the role of big data now and how that just doesn't predict who you're going to vote for this year, but for the next few years. And that's kind of terrifying. So this needs to be dealt with soon.
All right. So you can see the film Tuesday, 6:30 at the Little Theater.
6:30 at the Little. And then we'll Skype with Chris, who's the co-director. And then it'll screen again on Saturday at 3:00. But we won't have any discussion after that one.
All right. 6:30 at the Little Tuesday. Next Saturday, 8 days from now. 3:30.
At 3 o'clock
at the Little. And Magnolia would like us to let you know that it is going to be released more nationally next month. But
yeah,
this is a great chance to see it in the best venue in town and a chance to talk to Chris. We're going to do that in a moment. Katie, we're going to let you go. And why don't you let people know where to follow the work and get more involved if they'd like to.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me and for focusing on this issue, too. 2020 is a huge year. You can follow us at thepeople.org, and we'd love to help anybody trying to fight these issues.
Katie, thanks for taking the time.
Thank you.
The founder of the citizen action group Voters, Not Politicians, and part of her story is in this film. So let's go ahead and take that only break of the hour, and we're going to come back. We'll take more of your feedback. I've got a lot already here as we're talking about Slay the Dragon, the history of gerrymandering, but also the current moment of gerrymandering, the challenge at the grassroots level, and everything in front of us as we look at the way power has consolidated in this country. In studio with us, Linda Maroney is a filmmaker and director and programmer for the One Take documentary film series. Tim Nealon is chair of the Department of History and Political Science at Nazareth College. We'll bring in Chris Durant is the co-director, and we're going to bring in Chris next. Coming up in our second hour, when should sex education begin? New York State is one of 21 states that don't require schools to teach any sex ed, but a new bill would change things. It would mandate sex ed begin in kindergarten. Not with the kinds of lessons that you might learn in high school, but with healthy boundaries, good touch, bad touch, that kind of thing. There's a lot of opponents to the bill, and our guests are going to try to sort it out next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and I want to bring in Chris Durance, the co-director of Slay the Dragon, who's on the line with us now. Chris, congratulations on the film. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you so much.
Tell me how you decided to put your lens on this subject, Chris.
Well, we came out of out of 2016, a bit like Katie Fahey, we came out of 2016 just wondering what was happening. And with this overall sense that there was a disconnect between the politics that we were seeing in Washington and what we felt was on the, what we were feeling on the ground. And we read a book called Rat Oofed. I don't know what your listeners can hear.
Yes, good edit there, yes.
By a fantastic reporter called Dave Daly. And it was all about what happened in 2010, in the redistricting in 2010, that fundamentally changed the political landscape of the United States. And it was this aha moment. It was like, that explains the polarization. That explains why this politicians feel so unaccountable, like they're just not responding to the will of the people. And so we dug into it. But what was even more important for us was not so much looking back to 2010, though that was important, but looking forward and seeing what was happening in the swing states where so much of this damage had been done, in Michigan, in Wisconsin, in North Carolina, in Pennsylvania. And it was traveling to those states and meeting folks on the ground that brought us to Katie Fahey. And that was the moment that we realized that we had a film.
Well, and as the film bills itself, a film in part about not just Project Red Map, but a political heist, which is quite a dramatic way to describe it. Why do you describe it that way?
Absolutely. I mean, gerrymandering, for your listeners, is as old as the hills. And it's something that both parties have done. And they've done it because they can get away with it. But there's been an honor among thieves. Democrats have done it. They did it in California in the 80s. They're doing it in Maryland right now. Republicans have done it. They, you know, tried it in Texas and many other states. But it was basically back-scratching by politicians. They'd be looking after each other and to stay in power. What the Republicans realized when President Barack Obama was elected in 2008, they realized that 2010, a census year, a big redistricting effort, they realized that this was a moment when they could weaponize it. As Dave Daly says in the film, when they could bring it into the steroids era. And what they did was, I mean, it was brazen, it was smart, it caught the Democrats totally by surprise, and it gave them power, it gave them a lock on many state houses and on Congress for 10 years. I mean, we are still living with the maps that they drew in 2010. The 2020 election are huge, but they will be fought in large part on the maps that were drawn 10 years ago. Most people don't realize that, and they don't realize how rigged the game is before they even cast their ballot.
The Wisconsin story is at the focal point here. It takes us to the Supreme Court, and again, as I said in the first half hour, listeners might be thinking, well, I'm sure if the Supreme Court just gets their hands on this, they'll throw out gerrymandering. It sounds nefarious and illegal or unconstitutional. Take us through the Wisconsin story and what has happened at the Supreme Court level.
Yeah, so Wisconsin is fascinating. This is a 50-50 state. And in 2010, basically a group of Republicans realized that by selectively winning a few races, and it didn't take them a huge amount of money, they would get a lock on the map drawing. That map drawing enabled them to draw lines that were essentially impregnable. The Republican Party still has a control of that state legislature and the state Senate 8, 9, 10 years later. It's amazing what they did. So a group of citizens, a group of activists got together and they realized that they would not have a way of undoing these maps through political means. So they went to the courts and they came up with a fantastic case. They thought it was going to really help the citizens of Wisconsin find their voice. The state appealed. It goes up to the Supreme Court. And this really for us was, when we started the film, this was the central story. This felt like a hugely consequential moment. If they'd won, and it really felt like they had a good chance, if they'd won, then this would change the shape of redistricting across the whole nation, just this one case. It was Dave Daly in the film calls it the most consequential case after Citizens United in a generation. And when they first come up to the court, Justice Kennedy will remember him as a swing vote on the court and someone who's given encouraging messages to reformers who work on gerrymandering, given them very encouraging messages. So they craft an argument directed at his interests. It gets rebuffed for technical reasons. That's what we see in the film. It gets rebuffed for technical reasons when he is on the court. He then stands down. And many of your listeners will remember the appointment of Justice Kennedy to the court, the retirement of Justice Kennedy and the appointment of Justice Kavanaugh, that controversial hearing that he's in. Another gerrymandering case is right behind Wisconsin, comes up to the court, and they just wash their hands. The justices, the five conservative justices on the court, just wash their hands of this. They admit that there's a problem. They say this squarely, that there's a problem, but they say there is no role for the courts in it. And what that does is it puts it on us, as citizens, as voters, to become active participants in this. We can't sit back and we can't look to the courts to save us. We want to make a change if we see that the politics are skewed and rigged. And many do across party lines. Many do. And it's up to us to change it. And that's really the lesson from the Supreme Court.
Well, Chris, let me ask you, and then I'll ask Tim about this as well. And then we're going to work as many of your phone calls in as we can. We've got half the switchboard lit up on gerrymandering, which Tim Neelan, it warms his heart to see such interest in politics. But Chris, let's take Kavanaugh's position on this. He becomes the deciding vote. And essentially, the viewpoint is not that gerrymandering is fine, not that it's unconstitutional or not. It's essentially saying it's out of the scope of the federal court. It is out of our scope to make a decision on this. And as you describe it as washing their hands of it. But is there an argument there that it should be up to the citizens to engage and to address this? Do you think the conservative justices have an argument there that this one's out of their hands?
Honestly, in my opinion, I don't think they have an argument. And there are a couple of reasons for that. Firstly, the cases that went to the Supreme Court were argued in depth in lower federal courts and found pretty much unanimous support for efforts to reform partisan gerrymandering. These justices, well-respected, smart scholars of the law and smart scholars of election law in particular, they looked at what they were seeing in Wisconsin. They looked at what they were seeing in North Carolina, some of the most egregious gerrymanders. And what these gerrymanders do, so listeners have a clear sense of this. This isn't some nerdy political science preoccupation. What gerrymandering does is fundamentally change one person, one vote. It means that one person, one vote no longer applies in those gerrymandered states. Some people's votes count for way more than other people's vote. And I think when people realize that, when voters realize that, they find that fundamentally unfair. For the justices that on the conservative side in the Supreme Court, their argument has been that politicians should make these decisions. I think the response to that is that the politicians have such a conflict of interest. They should not be drawing their own lines. I mean, they cannot help but be conflicted here. And in almost every other realm of life, when there's a conflict of interest, you have people step in, outsiders, well-respected, independent outsiders step in to avoid that conflict of interest. We have it in sports. We have it in medicines. We have it in business. You know, this is why we have an FDA, and this is why we have a Federal Aviation Authority, is because you need to regulate certain aspects of it. But politicians are getting pretty much a free ride here, and the skewed politics in this country is the result of it, sadly. Hmm.
Tim Neelan, is there an argument that the conservative justices were correct in saying even if gerrymandering has its obvious problems, this should be up to the citizens to address, or up to, as he says, lawmakers otherwise?
I would say absolutely. I think if you know anything about the Supreme Court, they have for years avoided political questions. They said this is not a justiciable issue, that it is belongs in the hands of the voters. And they say that often. I mean, the Supreme Court was not put together with unlimited power to rectify all the problems in society.
So you think they're right on this?
I think if 18 of 21 states are changing the way that gerrymandering is working, then I think they were right. I think I'd rather have the citizens do this than have the court in Washington implement something like the efficiency gap, to have the data-driven use of their power. No, well, absolutely.
Well, it is clear either way here. Yeah. No matter where you are politically, I don't know a whole lot of people who think gerrymandering, outside of the people who benefit politically, I don't know a whole lot of people who say, it's really great living in a gerrymandered district. This is really working out. I really feel empowered. Clearly, this is something that most Americans agree on. The remedy is where Tim and Chris disagree. It's where citizens may disagree. But there's no doubt that the film lays out and the Supreme Court decision is laid out, it is in the citizens' hands. And that's a lot of responsibility.
Can I just say,
go ahead.
Yeah,
Chris.
Can I just say one? I just wanted to say one thing on the remedy, because I totally agree with what your other guests said.
Sure.
The problem is, in many states, there is no path to that remedy outside the state legislatures, which are gerrymandered, where there's a lock, where politicians are never going to give up that power. So in Michigan, as we see in the film, there is a path. There's a ballot initiative that citizens can take, and they do that, and they take on the powers that be in that state, and they win. I don't want to give too much away from the film, but they happen to win. But in most states, sadly, there is not that path. So we see in California, we see in Arizona, we see in Utah, we see in Oklahoma, we see lots of states in Missouri trying to take this path forward, which is fantastic. We're just not going to see it nationwide, because you just can't do an end run around the politicians who control the power right now. So there's no way forward. And that, to me, is the shortcoming in the Supreme Court's decision.
Jillian in Rochester wants to know, for those interested who can't make either showing, next Tuesday at 3:30 or next Saturday, 8 days from now at 3 at The Little, where after these dates can we access the film and then the discussion with the filmmaker at The Little? Is there a way to access that?
We haven't been recording any of those. Maybe we will at some point, but right now it's not on the docket.
Got to be there live.
Yeah, you have to be there live. I'm sure they're, you know, I know that they're going to roll this out nationally. Will it be coming back to Rochester? I don't know at this point.
Okay. Chris, do you know?
What I know at the moment is that we're going to be on demand and streaming and as trying to get as many people to see it in theaters as possible. I don't have exact dates yet. But stay tuned. I'm hoping in the next few weeks that it'll be available on all of those platforms, because it's such an important issue, and 2020 is such an important year for this. We really want as many people to see it as possible. And we're working with Participant. They're the funders of the film, and they're organizing a big impact campaign, starting off in 3 states, in Colorado, in Michigan, and Wisconsin. But these issues affect all of us. All of us nationwide. So we really want everyone to see this.
All right, the film's called Slay the Dragon. If you're on the phone, be patient. We're going to work through a lot of calls. A different Chris. Chris in Rochester first. Go ahead, Chris.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was wondering about the local level of gerrymandering that occurs with school districts. It's probably one of the most impactful to individual citizens in terms of where our kids go to school. Those lines are largely drawn racially. They have huge impacts on lifetime earnings and what you're going to do with your life. And they really have solidified the larger divides in our society. I was wondering if you guys have anything, any insight into the gerrymandering of our school districts.
Chris, I'll start with you on that. Go ahead.
Thank you so much for bringing this up. This is a hugely important question. It's one that we weren't able to tackle in the film. It sounds like it would be a whole film and in and of itself. But you're so right. I think what's exciting about what's happening today is that more and more people realize the consequences of this arcane measure, just drawing lines, how powerful that can be. And I hope that we're approaching a new era of activism where people really get involved at the local, at the county, at the state, and at the national level, and try and get politics back on track and tackle, among other things, what happens with school boards, because it's crucial.
Okay, Tim Nealon.
I think that, you know, the whole idea of citizen activism, school board elections are the ones that are probably some of the least and most neglected, I should say, in terms of citizen participation. And it seems to me that's a low-hanging fruit in terms of citizens having a say. We really could have some changes in that. The Supreme Court has ruled a little bit about, you know, the question of unified school districts and going back to the era of busing. And so I'm not sure there's a remedy in the courts, but I think that, again, if the citizens were to demand changes in the way the lines are drawn, you could see that happening. But, you know, it would be a political issue, and it really is.
Okay. Racine in East Rochester, next on the phone. Go ahead, Racine.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I quite agree with what everybody's been saying, but I look at this kind of taking my personal politics out of it. But actually, this is more of a mathematical issue. So if boundaries could be drawn in a fashion where you spin a model and you aggregate the populations and you could put some boundary conditions on that. For example, you want to, say, minimize the edges, the number of edges, or you would want to center it around population centers. And then you spin this model once, twice, three times, seven times, and let whatever commission there is, let them kind of put a weighted voting to any one of those, and then finally you select what everybody agrees upon the most. And that's it.
Chris, you want to take that first?
Yeah, I think there's lots of really interesting ideas about how to draw fair maps. And I think in many other countries and increasingly a number of states, they're figuring out that you can take the politics out of it and that the system is healthier when you do that. Iowa has a great system, for example, where they use professionals. In California and Arizona and Michigan soon, we hope, and many other states, citizens coming together, Republicans, Democrats, independents, coming together, consulting with experts, and most importantly, going around the state and talking about the maps and talking about the ideas so that communities feel represented and not divided up. I mean, when you see the film, you'll see these squiggly lines just go all over the place. And that's what happens. You get these distorted districts when politics starts distorting the process. So I think in the age of computers and in the age of professionalism, we can do far better than we have at the moment.
Okay, Tim Nealon?
I think the idea I like best is the idea of taking these maps back to the citizens and having them vote on the districts that they are going to live in. I think that'll make a tremendous change. And again, make it transparent. I would be huge population centers. You're going to have skewed registration based upon the fact that Democrats tend to cluster in urban areas. So I think there's maybe a different view, because I can't imagine Republicans would be thrilled by that. So I think, but having the districts vote for their own, I think it'd be great.
Okay. Lucia in Rochester next. Go ahead, Lucia.
Yeah, hi. Great show. Thank you, you guys. And thank you for the work you're doing. It's so important. My question is this. You're talking about very basic changes that have to happen. And what could be more basic than an accurate census count? And my question has to do with, what do you know about what's happening in Texas? A few months ago, I heard a report, actually on NPR, about the state of Texas not being forthcoming to count all its citizens, which in turn fired up a movement of citizens and Republican businessmen to sort of take on the challenge of counting everyone in Texas. And then I started thinking, well, if that's going on in Texas, a huge state, which is going to determine, you know, congressional districts, et cetera, what is happening on a nationwide level to suppress the census count? Because, you know, as everybody here knows, the more accurate it is, very likely it's going to reflect a change in the who can vote. So any thoughts on that? And by the way, one last note.
Sure.
I encourage everyone to start reading Supreme Inequality by Adam Cohn. I've started it, and it's unbelievable. Thank you.
Lucia, thanks for the phone call. Got to keep it tight. Chris, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. The census is crucial, I think. And the onus is on us. I mean, the onus is on us to encourage our neighbors, everyone we come across,
to take part in the census. It's the only way that we ensure fair representation for ourselves and that a fair provision of resources for all the people that live in our areas. I mean, there are going to be lots of groups who are going to be recalcitrant, lots of groups who are going to hang back, but we all need to do our level best to get everyone counted. That's where this all starts, with a census.
Tim Nealon?
Yeah, I agree. And I there was a case in one of the Dakotas where Native Americans didn't have addresses or some such, and there was an attempt to neglect them in terms of the census, but the community came together and demanded that they are counted within, changed the way that they were going to count. I think that's the critical thing, is people need to talk more about the census. I know there's a lot of community groups involved in the local census. We could lose one or two congressional representatives after 2021. I think it's really important that no matter what, that everybody counts, and, you know, irrespective of your politics, this is your local communities. So get out there and do what you can to get that census accurate.
Phenomenal reviews for the film Slay the Dragon. You can see it Tuesday at 6:30 p.m. at the Little Theater. A Skype conversation with Chris, the co-director, who's on the line with us following that screening. Linda, 20 seconds. You could have chosen a lot of films, and you do have to make a lot of decisions for one take. Why did you want this one?
I think one of the wonderful things that documentary can do is be a place to start conversations about big ideas. And gerrymandering is a huge idea. But this film conveys it in such a way to make it easy and be a starting place for everyone. Are you okay?
I am okay. I took a big swallow of water. It's not a good time to be coughing on the radio. People make assumptions. I'm okay. Tuesday, 6:30 at the Little Theater, and then if you can't do that screening, Saturday the 14th, that's 8 days from now, 3 p.m. at the Little.
3 p.m.
Thank you, as always.
Thank
for being
you.
Here. That's Linda Maroney, Tim Nealon, the chair of the Department of History and Political Science at Nazareth. Thanks, as always, to you.
Thank you.
Chris Cheers, great work on this. Thank you for taking the time to join us this hour.
Thank you so much. I'm looking forward to the Q&A next week.
Chris Durance is the co-director of Slay the Dragon, which you can see on Tuesday. More Connections coming up next.